talk all things NHL. Ray Ferraro from TSN, former NHLer, now analyst, joins us. Ray, how you doing?
I'm good. How's everything there?
Very well. Taylor Hall was just on the show talking about how, you know, he feels he's just a much better player today because the only way to improve in the NHL is by experiencing those in-game situations, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work. I know you've seen his game all year long. What's the biggest improvement in Hall's game that you've seen, and what do you think the ceiling is on where he can go as a player?
Well, I think without question the biggest improvement for me anyway is a patience when he gets the puck. Before he looked, like every time he got it, he was just like he was going to crash right through everybody, and he was going to go 100 miles an hour, and and that was the only way that he was going to be able to get it done. And part of that is that when Taylor was in junior, he was so much more powerful than everybody else. He probably was able to do that. And then you get to the NHL, and you're crashing through everybody, and oh, wait a minute, there's two defensemen, one of them's 220 pounds and the other one is an unbelievable skater and I can't get through them. And so because he was so good, he was still able to produce anyway. But what I see now is a little bit more willingness to give up the puck early and then to use his speed not to skate right into the defenseman, but to find the opening. Because if you can get it to him in flight, then, I mean, there's very few players that can do what he can do. I would say a decent comparable would be Max Pacioretty in Montreal. Pacioretty's a little bit taller, but he plays that same style that when he gets the puck and there's a little bit of a lane and he starts to drive it to the net, who's going to stop him? There just isn't many. And so I would say that's the biggest improvement I see. As far as the ceiling, I don't know. I mean, it's impossible to put a point number on a guy now because I can't even really get my head around what is a good point season anymore. Yeah. You know, I mean, 100 points is, I mean, what's there going to be, one this year?
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, remember when there was, you know, there'd be somebody with 130 points and somebody with, you know, and eight guys with 100 points. I don't see any reason, though, he can't, let Taylor's not a 40-goal scorer.
Yeah.
And it may seem obvious because he's close at that pace, but I think he should be in the 35 to 40 plus-ish goal range. And while that maybe doesn't sound like the magical 50 goals or anything, that's one hell of a year in the NHL these days. If you get to 40 goals, that's an incredible season.
It is, and that used to be it was always a good number, but because I think the 50-goal plateau, the one season, I think there might have been 14 guys in one year. That was the most. So it's still pretty rare, but you look at it even this season, guys who have scored 40 goals is a grand total of two right now, and Alexander Ovechkin and Perry. Pavelski and Pacioretty likely get there. Kessel has an outside chance. And that, you know, maybe Sagan, that's about it. There's not many guys who do it. So, yeah, 40-goal season. Taylor Hall, you talked about, Ray, how he's more patient with the puck. Is his playmaking ability maybe underrated?
Oh, for sure it is. I mean, if you ask somebody what Hall is, they'd tell you he's a goal scorer. You ask somebody what Eberle is, and they would say he's a playmaker. You know, today, in the media today, everybody needs to be defined as something. Every sound bite gets clipped down to 5 or 7 seconds. Everything is immediate, and it has to be, you know, very definitive. And there are some guys, like, for example, I mean, this maybe not a great comparison, but Michael Ryder's a goal scorer. If Michael Ryder doesn't score goals, he doesn't make many plays because he's not a great skater. I mean, that's it. He's a goal scorer, and he's had 35 goals a couple of times. If Taylor Hall doesn't score, he can impact the game with his speed and his ability to move the puck. I would say where the growth comes for Taylor is, you know, reining in his frustrations a little bit and maybe becoming a little bit better at keeping his energies focused on the game and not getting frustrated. Except he has turned 23, right?
No, he's 22 still.
Oh, so even better. You know, I mean, he's still a kid.
Yeah.
Right? And so I know we expect so much from these players, and they're paid so much money, so you expect them to act like they're 30-year-olds. But the fact is, they are young, they are immature, and they do get frustrated. And yet, there are guys that as soon as they grow out of that, you see this, you know, this big spike in their play. Taylor's maturity, I mean, there's not a big spike coming for Hall. He's already on that path. I mean, he's already in the top 10 in scoring. There's not a great spike that maturity is going to get to him or that's going to give him, but what it's going to do, I think, is going to level off his performances. There's going to be nights when maybe he disappears right now, you know, like where the night's not going well and he gets frustrated and he takes a penalty and then he takes himself out of the game because he's so frustrated at the circumstance. And in the future, he'll be able to get something done in those games as well. And that's going to, I mean, that's part of his evolution that I see coming.
Ray Ferraro joins us. Ray, what did you think of the David Backes, Nathan MacKinnon situation?
I'll start with the coaches. I mean, they're, you know, Hitch likes to play the victim a lot. And, so, you know, I mean, him and Patrick got off on the wrong foot this year with the glass thing right off the hop. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of coaches talking about players on the other team to call them gutless. I don't care how old Nathan MacKinnon is. He's just a player on the team. It's not like you go around checking guys' birth certificates. Oh, I can't punch this guy because he's 18, but I can punch that guy because he's 21. You know, I mean, I don't think that really happens. And the fact is there's been lots worse happen, over the course of time. And I wouldn't say Backes is gutless. I can't buy that.
No, I agree. You know, to me, Patrick Waugh is doing there what he did in the first game of the season when he pushed a glass to really fire up his troops. I understand why he's doing it. People were calling Backes' actions despicable. I'm like, all Backes was doing there was trying to send a message to Colorado, says, hey, if you want to play ugly, I have no problem taking my gloves off to your star player. And because he took his gloves off but didn't punch him, he just wrestled him to the ground, right? Like, to me, I thought there was a message. What did you see as a former player?
Despicable, not by a long yeah. shot. That makes me laugh, actually.
Yeah.
You know, to Ronaldo's hit yesterday, that's closer to despicable for me because he targeted his head.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
If David Backes, when he had Nate MacKinnon on the ice, if he wanted to be in the quote despicable, that would have turned out a lot worse. And he didn't. He wrestled him to the ground, and that was the end of it. Hitch likes to, you know, like I said, Hitch likes to, you know, play the infuriated old guy once in a while, and that's what he was. And then he plays the victim for a little bit, and then he says, you know, I could have really escalated things by putting Reeves out there. Yeah, he could have, and then he would have got to fine $10,000 too.
Yeah.
But he didn't because he knew it wasn't the right thing to do. And so I don't know. I see that stuff, and all that I can hope is that they match up in the playoffs somewhere. I mean, when I see, do you not, as it gets near the end of the year, Jason, when you see stuff like that, or the Rangers and the Flyers starting to bark at each other, you go, man, I hope they play in the playoffs.
Oh, that's exactly it. And, you know, Colorado-Chicago is going to be a great first-round series, I think. Hopefully a lot of the guys get back and are healthy. Otherwise, it won't be as entertaining as it could be without Duchesne, Taves, and Kane, without a doubt. But, yeah, that series. The St. Louis Blues, Ray, now, you were on very good teams, and then you were on not-so-good teams. Late in the season, when you're on a good team, and St. Louis really hasn't had much to play for a while, they had a lot of guys at the Olympics. Do you think there's a fatigue factor for them kind of setting in? They're like, okay, let's just get to the postseason.
Yeah, not physically, though, I don't think.
Yeah, okay, so mental fatigue.
I think they're just mentally dozy.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and you say you don't want to go into the playoffs and think that you're just going to turn on a switch, and I don't think they're trying to do that. But what I do think is that they're probably just not as sharp. When you watch them play, they make some mistakes that they don't normally make, and they do miss Tarasenko. However, he gives them really good balance in their lineup, and for a team that doesn't score real easy, they're really well balanced, but they don't score really easy. I think they're probably, 5 or 10% off their game, and they're kind of stumbling around. Look what Anaheim's doing. You know, I mean, this has been for 2.5 weeks now, and for 2.5 weeks, that's a long time. Now you start to get a little bit concerned. You're like, can they be a really good team? Are they you know, are they just a product of a great start again and a team that's just kind of held on? You know, I mean, that I would be more concerned if I was Anaheim than if I was St. Louis. And I would want to be Boston if I could be anybody going into the playoffs, where everybody looks like they're healthy. And outside of Aginla, I'm not real sure. You know, he's missed two of the last three games with a lower body injury and wasn't very effective the game in the middle. But they appear to be healthy. They appear to be deep. And that looks like a really good team come another 10 days.
You look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and obviously, you have to follow them a lot.
Yep.
What do you see as the biggest concern on that team that they will try to address or need to address in the offseason?
Oh, well, I don't think there's any question. It's their play without the puck. They don't have anybody or enough guys that are able to stop the cycle when it gets into their zone. It's kind of like Edmonton. So you end up spending hours in your zone. And then by the time you finally do break the cycle, you're so tired, you get the puck to center ice, you chip it down the ice, you change. But they're changing too, except they've got the puck. Now they come straight back up the ice, and now you're back in your zone again. And so for Toronto, you know, early in the year they were winning anyway, and so they kept saying it doesn't matter. But over the course of time, your guys just get worn down. The scoring chances get more and more difficult to occur. And so Toronto doesn't score enough. They certainly can't defend enough. Because if it's not Kessel and Van Riemsdyk and Bozak, they're kind of pretty shallow. So I would say their defensive play, their defense, and their commitment of their forwards to play the game without the puck. And that doesn't mean that you got to have, 14 Bob Gainey's playing. But what it means is when you don't have the puck, you've got to be willing to fight to get it back. And, I've done many Leafs games this year, and I just don't see that.
That doesn't sound like it's automatically a coaching thing then, is it, Ray? Like, I'm not giving Randy Carlyle a free pass, but a lot of that, but what you just described to me sounds like the onus is on the players to want to have that willingness and desire to get it back.
Yeah, but if you have players that can't or won't, then you got to move some people.
Yeah,
I mean that. I think they're at the point there where they're gonna have to make some change. Doesn't have to be super significant change, I don't think. Like, I'm not saying they should go in there, with a meat cleaver and clean out the locker room. But they've got to make some change. It's obvious, Jason. They just don't have it. They don't. They're a team. They're kind of in the area of the playoff race that most thought they would be. Kind of somewhere from that 6 to 12 range, because it always seems like 6 to 12. There's only 5 or 6 or 7 points that separate those teams anyway. But that's kind of where I thought they would be and where most people thought they would be. But when things started to go wrong for them, they didn't fight hard enough or didn't have the internal fight to bring themselves back out of it. And as a result, in all likelihood, they're going to miss the playoffs.
Oh, they're definitely missing the playoffs. Oh,
okay, but what if, I mean, you laugh, but it's, they can get to 90 points, right?
Yeah.
So what if Detroit beats Buffalo and then loses their last three games? They're 90.
Yeah, and then Columbus then has to win one of four, too.
Yeah. The team that
New Jersey.
The team that would scare me is if I was ahead of them is New Jersey.
Yeah,
because they've got winnable games.
Yeah,
and can you imagine if they miss the playoffs? Do you think they'll look at their shootout record and throw up all over it? 0-11. They didn't even have to be 5-6. If they were 2-9,
yep,
they'd be in.
Yeah, that's.
They'd be right there.
I don't understand that at all. How
don't you win one by accident?
Yeah, at some point.
You think your goalie would fall down and stop one more shot, or one of the guys would break a stick and the puck would go in somewhere? Like 0-11, it's unfathomable for that to happen.
Well, you can look at the goalies, but here's the thing. They have scored a grand total of 3 shootout goals this year.
3 for 39.
That is like, and Jacob Josephson and Reed Boucher have 2 of the 3 goals.
Like, I don't even know. Like, I could see why one guy would get freaked out by it.
Yeah.
And say, oh, gee, I'm not very good at it, or I don't want to do it. But the whole team doesn't want to do it now.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I don't want to. You get the impression they're sitting there and the coach is walking behind them, and you know where they're going. Don't pick me. Don't pick me. Don't pick me.
I don't.
0-11. Oh, man.
It is. It's brutal. And you just, I don't know. Like, do they not practice it in practice
you can,
ever?
But see, this is the thing. I think you can practice a shootout all you want.
Yeah.
Because you can never replicate what it's like in the game. First of all, the goalies aren't trying the same. What are you going to do? Do 45 breakaways on the goalies after practice? They don't want to get hurt.
Yeah.
It's a lot different when the game's on the line. I mean, I've practiced and played with lots of guys that are all-stars until the game starts.
Yeah.
And then, you know, oops, things get a little confusing by then. Or, you know, a little complicated. So you can practice it if you want. I think, my personal opinion, I was pretty good on breakaways. I think players way overcomplicate this thing.
Yeah.
Some guys go super so slow, and in a game they would never do that. Like if they had a breakaway, they would never do that. So why not just play it like a breakaway? Like why not? Don't think of six things. Think of one move for a shot and one move for a deke. That's it.
Well, you look.
That's all you need.
Like Patrick Eliash is 0-for-8, and coming into this season, the guy was pretty good. He had scored 22 on 57 chances, like at about 38-39%. He's 0-for-8.
So that's one guy. So let's decide not to take him out anymore.
Yeah.
Let's not put him out anymore.
But then
everybody
they got
else.
Yeah, well, Henrik, Klo, and Zajac are all 0-for-5. Bruner, who's Bruner, you'd think is a guy who should excel in that. He's 0-for-4. Like Jagr's 1-for-4. I've never seen it. And when I was looking up their numbers, 3-of-39, and really of all their regulars, they have one goal from Jaromir Jagr. Like it's
now. So you give those numbers. Of course, I live in Vancouver. If you've ever watched Daniel Sedin and Henrik,
yeah, they're not good
through the shootout. You're like, how could highly skilled players be that bad? Like sometimes it looks like they're going to go in and freeze it behind the net, and you're like, what are they doing? It's not that hard. Like, just go in and shoot it. If you got nothing else, go in and shoot it. Make the goalie make the save. But 3-for-39, what if it costs them a playoff spot? And it might. Uh-huh. It very well could.
Well, Henrik has never scored a shootout goal. He's only gone 5 times. He's 0-for-5.
Consistent.
And Daniel's 4-of-27. But it's amazing.
Yeah, 4-of-27.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, they're looking down the bench like, get somebody else out there.
Ray, always good to catch up. We'll do it again soon.
You bet. You'll see you in Edmonton this week. My last TSN game is, I think it's Thursday. Los Angeles is there. Is it Thursday?
Yeah, it's the Kings. You betcha.
Yeah, so I have Wednesday in Calgary, Thursday in Edmonton, and then that's it for us until the playoffs start, and we'll wait for Sunday night when all the games are locked down, and we'll figure out, or we'll find out. We don't figure out anything. We're just the workers. They just tell us where to go.
Perfect.
So we'll talk to you this week.
You betcha.
See ya.